Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G,
yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah. On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Happy Friday. Gallant and George here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. No Paul Gallant today or Monday. Instead, Sean Mapes will be in studio with me, Austin behind the glass, and you know, maybe Paulus has to leave more often because the Astros got to win. Like, if the Astros win 4 straight games, they win today and they sweep the Tigers. Do we have to ban Paul Gallant from the show until they lose again?
I don't think Paul would be upset about that. Yeah. I think he'd be like, oh, all right.
He'll just be like, okay, like, free, like no vacation days, like just can't work. But I mean, look, I mean, sometimes you have to do what you have to do. And like, if we're what's, you know, gets the Astros going, then I think we have to make that sacrifice. But
yeah, and I think Paul's would be willing to take one for the team in
yeah.
that way.
Yeah, he'd be okay with that. But yeah, the Astros get the win yesterday. John Singleton again, just like tank shot, incredible bat flip. Rodo Blanco, very good once again. Yordan Alvarez goes deep, which was such a lovely thing to see because he has just been struggling. Alex Bregman has a solid day. You still lost the series. You still had lost 4 games in a row before you won yesterday. But, and we'll kind of dive in this throughout the show. Like, if there's a turnaround that's going to happen, it starts with yesterday's game because you have Blanco have a good game. Javier is going to return to the mound this weekend. But yesterday it was a nice victory, Sean. Just it felt good to see a win for the Astros once again.
It was not only a real victory, it was also a moral victory as well.
Yes.
It was one that they needed. And like we've said a lot during the show this season, they're all must-win games right now. And yesterday afternoon was especially a must-win game. And it kind of went to blueprint as much as anything in the 2024 Houston Astros
yeah.
can go to blueprint where it was your starter. Now, in spring training, we did not think it would be Rodo Blanco would be the example of this, but it is your starter getting through, I guess 5 2/3 and then setting it up for Abreu Presley Hader to finish it out. Now, that part hasn't really gone well. Like, the Astros haven't had it all firing on all cylinders, mm-hmm. really, until yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, Paul definitely texted us yesterday. He was at the airport watching the game, and he's like, yeah, they're going to lose this game.
I was going to say, even yesterday, it didn't go 100% to plan, but you had Abreu come in, get the last out of the 6th, and then get through the 7th clean. And then you had Ryan Pressly, who was the one. Well, he was Ryan Stressly. He was Stressly.
Yeah.
And he gives up the hardest hit ball I've ever seen. I know they have actual stats for what's the hardest hit ball. That was a nuke that Aaron Judge hit off of Pressly in the 8th. And so Josh Hader had to come in and get the last out of the 8th before getting the 9th. And that's also where this hasn't really, I guess, gone to plan with Josh Hader getting through an inning stress-free. And it wasn't stress-free, but he gets the save. And again, for the Astros, just win, baby.
Yeah, just win. Just win. Look, and you face the Tigers this weekend. You're facing probably their 3 best pitchers this weekend, I think it is. So you need yesterday to start to build momentum. But the biggest thing that from this stretch that we've seen since Jose Abreu got sent down to Florida, John Singleton seems like he's the real deal. Like, maybe not forever, but what he's given the Astros in this stretch is just such it's been so important because he's really been the only guy besides Tucker and Altuve that has been consistently good since Abreu got sent down. Like, are you ready to call him the first baseman for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, I don't want to say long term, because obviously I'm not talking about 2025, 2026 first baseman. But I think for until he puts together like a clunker 2 weeks, a clunker month, I think he's just the first baseman. Yeah, even like you said, even then,
like what's your other answer?
He would have to go Abreu mode to like for it to for his job to be in any sort of jeopardy, because like you said, I mean, basically since Jose Abreu got sent down, he's been the second best, second most dependable bat in that lineup after Tucker.
I mean, John Singleton has proven he's your first baseman at a minimum until, like you said, he's awful. And they feel like Michael Brantley and Jeff Bagwell and whoever else is in Florida with Jose Abreu feels that he's figured out whatever's wrong and they've got his quick twitch muscles back. Like, I just don't believe any of that's happening. Yeah. So John Singleton's your first baseman for the foreseeable future unless you make a deadline acquisition, because things turn around for this team and he falls apart at the same time. You believe that Mauricio Dubon or Yainer Diaz or Joey Loprofito can play first base. And I don't think that they view those as real options. Mauricio Dubon is not a real option at first base. He is a, like, the world is burning around you option at first base, which is what he was.
Yeah.
Like, and that's why they threw his name out there. Yainer Diaz has gotten minimal work even before games at first base, so he's not a real option. The only way he becomes your everyday first baseman probably is if Singleton sucks and you reacquire, like, Maldonado to be your everyday catcher, which I don't either.
Or a different backup catcher. Or a different backup catcher. And Caratini's your starter. But yes, John Singleton has given the Astros the ability to not have to have this very tough, very depressing conversation with the way he's played. Because, right now there's really no right answer. When Abreu got sent down, we didn't think Singleton would be this, but he was at least going to be the Band-Aid solution. And right now he's been way, way more than the Band-Aid solution for this team. And they don't have to have that tough conversation of teaching, Joey Loprofito, or you don't have to have a first baseman who's learning on the job, because not only what Singleton has given you with his bat so far, he made a couple scoops that I don't want to keep holding him to the standard, because it's such a low standard. It's almost insulting to any Major League Baseball player that this is the standard that we're holding to. Jose Abreu doesn't make some of those plays with his glove.
He does not.
And I know Jose Abreu isn't exactly a gold glover out there, especially this year. It feels like everything about him was bad, but he's not only swinging the stick very well, but he also made some crucial plays to help win the game.
Yeah, that pick he has on the hater throw.
Yeah, it was the hater.
In the bottom of the ninth. Yeah,
which play it was. Yeah, that one was. Other games that happens and that goes past whoever's playing first, and the Astros lose that game. And John Singleton kind of saved the game with that catch or with that scoop.
Guys, I'll be honest. I think there's a chance that foreseeable future could include next year. That if they're unwilling as an organization to move off of Jose Abreu's contract, and we've talked about this, like, if they're going to do it, it would most likely be this offseason. But I do wonder if with what happened with Montero, the early results on Hader, Brantley, and Singleton, that even though Jim Crane is calling the shots here, clearly I think in free agency, I wonder if he'll get a little gun-shy with bigger contracts to veteran players. And if that could lead us to a world in which John Singleton is your everyday first baseman going into the next season.
Yeah, if you put yourself in Jim Crane's very expensive shoes, like you said, just walk down the last 2 years of free agents that have been big money free agents that have been signed by this team. It's Rafael Montero, it's Jose Abreu, and so far what you're getting out of Josh Hader, these outside spins that we've been asking forever. It was always the biggest contract that Jim Crane has ever signed outside free agent to was the Josh Reddick contract,
which
was 4 years, $16 million a year. And that was kind of the drum that keep getting beat every time there's a free agent and you go, well, the Astros, like, yes, this free agent would perfectly fit the Astros' need, but the Astros don't make that kind of move. The last few years, they've started to make those kind of moves. And those three that I talked about, 0-3.
100%
0-3. Now, Hader, there's still hope. Because I think you guys talked
and about it. And I would say 0-4, because I would include Brantley in that bad signing.
Yes. Yeah, that is a good point. Brantley was like $16 or $15 million for one year last year, and he played barely a month. Yeah, that is a good point that Brantley is included. I think Hader, I mean, right now, easy L. Long-term, I am a little bit more optimistic that he'll be who he's been for most of his career, but obviously early returns, if we're talking about spending money this offseason, I'm probably not loving what you're seeing out of Hader right now.
No, yeah, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, John Singleton, it's just, he's one of the stories of this team. And when we get back, we'll continue to talk about yesterday's game. But probably the number one story and why there is at 13-24, last place in the AL West, why there's a major glimmer of hope still for the Astros this season. The conversation probably starts and ends with Ronald Blanco, because he once again was pretty good yesterday, and to go 107 pitches, he even looks just like a not traditional major league pitcher anymore, because he's going so many pitches and so consistently. It's been so impressive. We'll continue to roll on this here on the other side. It's Glant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Just to get this out of the way, Texans rookie minicamp is underway.
Oh, wow. And breaking news.
And that's your Texans update. They're all under contract. Congratulations.
they're all on the field.
They're great. All on the field. Kamar Lassiter on the field.
All right.
Kalen Bullock on the field.
All right, there is a picture of them in shorts and a jersey without pads. Look,
there's
on.
Video. Okay.
Okay. So documented, they are on the
field. Yeah, they're on the field.
Love it.
Currently, right now. And that's all I got for Texans rookie minicamp.
Everyone's jersey numbers look cool. Everyone got good numbers.
Kenyon Green apparently changed his jersey number this offseason. That's the only thing I learned today at rookie minicamp.
You know what? I'm good on the Texans talk.
Okay. All right, that's it. That's all the Texans talk for today. Unless someone tears an ACL. That's...
Oh, no, don't even put it out there. I guess there's only like 7 guys that are working out that are going to be on the team.
Yeah, most of these guys are like, they're going to be roughnecks next year. Like, they're not even going to be on the Texans. But Ronald Blanco yesterday, it was good once again. He is like one of the surprise stories in all of Major League Baseball. Maybe the number one. I mean, to go from being told your last day at spring training in Houston when they're taking on the Space Cowboys, that you're making the team, to then throwing a no-hitter 9 days later.
Yeah.
He's 3-0 with a 2.31 ERA this season. 5.2 innings pitched, 2 earned runs. He had full control of yesterday's game. And I love that he went back out there in the 5th or for the 6th. Because I thought he was done. I didn't think that they would continue to drive up his pitch count like that. But to have a guy with where this bullpen's at, that hopefully in the future, if he can go 100-plus pitches, you're hoping he gets more than 5 2/3 of a game out of there. But it's been such a relief to have someone like him. And it makes to what you talked about in the first segment, Sean, the ability to get to the blueprint. It's what makes it possible. Yeah. Cause that's what's been so hard about this team too, is that even if you've wanted to go to this blueprint in games, your pitching still isn't been good enough to even get you to the point where Abreu can get the 7th and Presley can have the 8th and Hader can have the 9th.
And then those guys haven't come.
And those guys haven't been good either.
Yeah, but even getting to that point has been a struggle. And yeah, the fact that it's Ronald Blanco of all people that not just got there yesterday, but can get there pretty consistently. I have his game log up right now. Yesterday was 5 2/3. Before that, 6, 5 2/3, 6, 6, and then 9. When he threw a no hitter,
it's pretty good.
That's exactly. I mean, he's been the ace of the staff. As unbelievable that is when you first hear it. I mean, what he has done is ace level stuff for a team that desperately needs it. And I'm terrified to think of what would happen if Rodell Blanco was not on this team.
You'd be a disaster.
This team would be a disaster.
Because if you look at Fromber's stat, like Fromber was excellent before he got hurt. Christian Javier, he was excellent before he got hurt. And now that you have all those guys back with Blanco, it should in theory solve a lot of your problems. And we'll get to this at the start of the 1 o'clock hour. Apparently it doesn't mean the end of Spencer Arrighetti and Hunter Brown in this rotation totally. We're kind of waiting to see exactly what it's going to look like over the next week and a half of what the future rotation is. But it's funny. There's two types of Astros fans right now I'm observing. Okay, you have Todd the Show on Twitch, who says they're about to go on a 9-game win streak. Very positive.
All right.
And then you have the text line from the 713. Singleton, Tucker, and Altuve are good now. Then once Alvarez, Bregman get going, Singleton, Tucker will not be good. This team is just frustrated. So
that is the that.
Where are so that's the definition of glass half full versus glass pretty much empty.
It's not even halfway empty.
I guess it's really not even half full. That's all the way full if Todd's being serious. You know, but even to go on a 5-6 game win streak at this point would be glass half full.
The Astros are they are not in the place, and it's a tough place to be at because for the last 7 years they've been in a spot where not only are every game when you turn it on in the top of the first, not only do you think they can win, you're kind of expecting them to win. Mm-hmm. Every single game you're like, I feel very good about the Astros' chances here. And now it's the opposite. You turn on the TV and you're like, how's this going to go wrong? Like you said, we're in the group text when Presley went out there, we all thought this is a game the Astros lose. There's no way that this goes right for the Astros. And I even thought, and it was something that happened in the Cubs series. I think it was Rafael Montero came out for one inning. I think it was the fifth, and got one out, and then he went to the dugout, sat down, came back out for the sixth, and immediately gives up a home run. Or I think he left two men on, and then Abreu gave up a home run to Pete Crow Armstrong to lose that game. And that was what's going through my head. Not, oh yeah, these are the three best pitchers, or at least the three best relievers on the Astros. The Astros are in a good spot. I'm sitting here thinking, well, you know, they have lost the game exactly like this before in the very recent past. So I'm at a point where...
Expect the worst.
I do not expect them. I think they can, but I do not expect them to win the Detroit series this weekend. And I don't know if I expect them to get more than a split in Oakland, because that's just the team... That's what this team has been.
I know.
I cannot expect them to break through at any point until they actually break through, until they actually go on a 4 or 5 game win streak. I know earlier in the season we asked for a 3-game win streak. Now, I mean, you're farther in the season. Your record still is what it is. You need now the win streak barrier to actually make a dent on your record has to be a 7-game win streak just to get to 20-24.
Yeah, that would be... That'd be something if they roll it out.
I don't expect them to.
I don't expect them to either.
There's no reason to expect them.
Yeah, I don't expect them to, but at the same time,
it's possible.
It's possible, and I mentioned this a lot just because I think it's fascinating to me that, like, as the Astros have struggled and continue to struggle, you look at betting lines, Vegas still tells you that they still believe in the Astros more than we do in this very moment, and I think more than most fans do, because most fans are probably with you. Where they're glass half empty at this point, where you are expecting the worst. But if you look at the odds tonight, the Astros, if you just look at the money line, they're a -150 betting favorite to win against the Detroit Tigers when Fromber takes on Casey Mize at 540. Detroit's +130 to win this game today. They will probably be the underdogs tomorrow because Taylor Skubal has been one of the best pitchers in baseball this season, and Christian Javier will be back on the bump for the Astros. But consistently, they still are favored by Vegas to win these games. And that's why I still can't totally quit them just yet. And part of it is also just that moment yesterday with Yordan Alvarez and Joe Espada after the game saying that, Yordan looked in the dugout basically just saying, I'm here and like I'm back. And He can be because that's
home,
actually where,
home
like
run and a double.
I've never disagreed. Like the most I've ever disagreed with someone, like a MLB general manager, is the quote that Dana Brown said on Wednesday on the flagship there. It, when he just said that if Alex Bregman gets going, we get going. I don't think if Alex Bregman gets going, like it just solves your problems. Yordan Alvarez getting going, that solves a lot of your problems. That is where, you know, at one point he was hitting 188 in his last 100 at-bats. I think that was going into Thursday's game where he was at with that. If Yordan Alvarez starts driving guys home left and right and the power comes back in a big way, he's the guy that is really the ultimate game changer for this lineup.
Yeah, and because not only, you know, just what he brings, and we all know, I mean, we know what it means when Yordan Alvarez gets going. Like, not just how good he is normally, but when you're like, Yordan Alvarez is red hot recently, that is, he's, I mean, if not the best, top three at worst.
It's probably
Shohei, Soto, Yordan. That's the list. And when Yordan is right. And not only are you getting that, but I mean, we talk about the only other guys that have really been consistent forces in this lineup. It's the two guys that hit ahead of them. It's Altuve and it's Tucker. And now Pena hitting fourth is another guy who's been good this year. So I agree with you that putting it all on Bregman isn't like actually correct. It's also not really fair to Alex. But I think that Yordan getting right would mean so much more than Bregman getting right because of just all the knockdown effect, all the dominoes that fall after that with him getting right.
It is funny that like the way we're talking about Yordan Alvarez and you watch yesterday's game and how it went, and Alex Bregman went 2-for-4
in yesterday's game, two singles,
back to 198.
Almost to the Mendoza line.
I saw someone like, Alex Bregman back to 198. Okay, can we wait till he's hitting like 225? To like really celebrate, like I'm all for Alex Bregman turning it around. I think it would be awesome. It would help this team tremendously, of course.
Yeah.
Easy thing said on this radio show is that one. But before we celebrate Alex Bregman getting two hits, can we like let's get above the Mendoza line? Let's really get this thing moving.
I think with Alex Bregman, I think so. Dana Brown's wrong by saying that if Alex Bregman gets going, like the Astros get going. However, I do think Alex Bregman is kind of a microcosm for how I feel about the Astros. The way I feel about Bregman is the way I feel about the Astros, is that, both horribly disappointing this year, both very, very, very sad about what they've put on the field thus far in the season, but they're two guys that – it's the team and Alex Bregman where I do have some belief that they can get it back on the rails, but the – I will not be. I guess I'm not going to be optimistic. I'm not going to predict anything. I'm just going to react to it. And so I do not think that the Astros can make the playoffs this year. I'm not sure if they can. I do not think they will. I do think they have a chance though, and I won't be saying that they will make the playoffs until they already prove over a long period of time that that's who they are. Because right now, what they're proving is that they're 13-24 base, but they're one of the five or six worst baseball teams in MLB. And Alex Bregman, really, him batting, he's now sixth. Even that's a charity.
And Fuentes asked here on the Twitch, what do we think Bregman ends up hitting this season? Let's just focus on batting average.
Batting average, okay. So he's 198 right now.
Does he crack 225?
Yeah, he can get to 225.
230?
He can. I don't know. That's where it turns into he can. I'm not sure if I expect him to. I expect 225, 230. It's like, okay. I'll say yes to 230.
Okay.
To
235.
No.
Okay. No. All right.
I have to draw the line.
That's fine.
I have to draw the line.
We're trying to figure out what the line is.
I was really thinking. I don't think he can get to 240. And so you saying 235, I'm like, well, okay, what's 5 point? Like, I can't just say, well, it's only five extra points. No, at a certain point, I have to put my foot down. No, I think 230. I mean, maybe it gets hot starting tonight and everything turns around. But at a certain point, there's only so many more at-bats you have in a season to turn this thing around.
Yeah, look, and I get some grief here from a couple of these guys. on the Twitchers, obviously.
No.
Sometimes they say they're just going to say things in the chat, so I read them.
Yeah.
But I like Todd the show, so he's trying to get me. Well, I'm just going to make sure I mark this one and send it to Jeremy to put him on Bad Take Boulevard. He says Bregman's going to get to 265 this season. Todd, I hope you're right. I hope you're super duper optimistic, probably not being serious, but maybe serious takes on the Twitch right now are for real.
I would love
to see that.
It's so sad that I get it, you know, batting average, not what it once was. But you know, back in my day, Joe, it's not what it once was. 265 is a very modest goal. 265 is not an outlet. He's not saying he's gonna be Tony Gwynn. I mean Alex Bregman, literally for his career, is a 272 hitter.
Yeah.
So he's saying his outlandish take is that he can be a little bit worse than he has been over the course of his career.
Yeah. I mean, it's so hard. The Astros are such a funny team because it's just one win can just make you feel just a little bit better after the two games before. And it's mostly the rotation getting healthy that I think would give me the most sense of optimism at this point. This is probably the last time that I will have like big time optimistic feelings about the Astros if there's going to be a turnaround. Because even if we get to the point where they're kind of in contention, but they haven't had that super hot streak, but they've been above 500, and it's like, oh, well, like McCullers, Garcia, and Urquidy are all getting ready to come back. I just don't know even how the rotation fits with all those guys in theory if everyone's healthy. But like this is the one that matters. Javier, Fromber, JV, Blanco, those four guys are your best four pitchers on this roster right now. And yes, it'd be awesome to have Luis Garcia or Lance McCullers in that fifth spot, but that's so far away that they're either going to be good or they're going to be irrelevant.
I know.
By the time they come back.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think there's going to be an in-between.
No. Yes, they're at the point of the season where for Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia to save their season, they kind of already have to save their season before that, before those guys can be reinforcements. And like you said, really, the time is now. Like, I know we kept saying, well, let's wait until May. And now what I'm kind of doing is saying, let's wait until June. But you look at the remaining schedule for the rest of this month. They play Detroit three times. They play Oakland four, and then they have another. So they play Oakland seven. They have seven games against Oakland. They play Milwaukee three times. They play the Angels three times before they wrap things up for the month going to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
If you're gonna make a run,
this is the moment.
This is where you make the run.
100%.
You have teams that still have better records than you, but are at least in your neighborhood. You're playing 10 games against the Angels and Athletics, and that is where you need to make up the ground.
All right, so this show's about 3 months old at this point. One of the first time, like right around the trade deadline, is really when we started getting going, the three of us, Gallant, myself, and Sean. And obviously there was some Jalen Green rumors going around, but a name that was brought up a couple times and quite a bit since has been Donovan Mitchell. He has had an excellent run in the East playoffs so far. And I think that I'm ready to officially change my stance on Donovan Mitchell potentially being a member of the Rockets. We'll get to that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Before we do that, I want to tell you about LeBurge Lake Charles. I'll be there next weekend. We're going to be going out for a remote show on Saturday. We'll be doing the bullpen live from there from noon to 3 on Saturday the 18th. Great spot to go bet on your favorite Texas teams. If you're feeling good about the Astros, let's go for it. Let's make some wagers. The Texans schedule will come out on Wednesday next week on the 16th, and you'll be able to right away just continue to bet on the over-unders for the Texans season. You'll probably be able to bet on the first game of the season by next week, whether it's in the sportsbook or on the ESPN Bet app. They have 19 betting kiosks, TVs all over the place, great food inside the sportsbook, a great casino inside LeBurge as well. When you leave Texas and want to bet on your Texas teams, make sure you do it at LeBurge Lake Charles.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Last night, the Cleveland Cavaliers tied up the series versus the Boston Celtics. And Sean Mapes filling in for Paul Gallant today, Austin behind the glass. They won 118-94. Donovan Mitchell went off for 29 points. And he is really putting on just a clinic so far in the postseason. He's averaging 29.2 points per game, 5.3 rebounds, 4.9 assists. He's shooting 31% from the three-point line, which is like 5% lower than he typically does from the three-point line. So he's not even at his best. But he's shooting 46.8% from the field collectively. He's just playing. He's playing great basketball. And he's taking over in a way in which you want a superstar to do. And Donovan Mitchell, to me, is not in that top-tier category. Devin Booker, you know, KD, Anthony Edwards, of course, at this point in time. Steph Curry still. But he's in that next group of players that you would also probably include a guy like Jalen Brunson. And the more I've thought about Donovan Mitchell, and there's been a lot of conversation, like if you listen to any of the Bill Simmons or Ryan Russillo content that they put out, that he's probably going to get traded this offseason.
There was a report, I think it was before last night's game, where it was if the Cleveland Cavaliers do not win the title, like the expectation is that Donovan Mitchell will ask for a trade.
And more specifically, too, is he may not even ask for a trade, but he might just directly tell them, I'm not signing contract.
I'm not re-signing here, so.
Yeah, like maybe if I hit free agency, like we'll see what happens. Yeah. But
so you do the math.
Yeah, you do the math. It means he's not coming back. So he's going to become available, my belief is, this offseason. And the more I've thought about it, I'm like, okay, this is everything you want Jalen Green to be. This might be Jalen Green's peak, is what Donovan Mitchell is. So would you rather have Jalen Green, who could be Donovan Mitchell, or would you rather just have Donovan Mitchell?
Yeah, and a team that won 41 games this year, just missed out in the play-in tournament, and you want to take the next step. I think Tillman Fertitta and Rafael Stone and Ime Udoka has been clear about that since Udoka got hired, that this is phase two, mm-hmm. Joe. This is phase two.
Phase two.
And ready for liftoff.
And I think they're ready to skip phase three. I don't think that those reports from The Athletic about the trade deadline are crazy when it's like, where are they thinking about making a big move? They want to accelerate this whole process. Donovan Mitchell is what accelerates the process. And I was playing on the trade machine, or not the trade machine, the lottery machine earlier today. Yeah. Look, crazy things can happen. Like the fourth one I did, the Rockets got the first and the fourth pick in the draft, which means they kept their pick from OKC.
Yeah, so to keep the OKC pick, the Rockets need to finish in the top four, and no matter what, they will get the Nets pick.
Yeah,
which is slotted in to be ninth. I think the Rockets pick is like 12th.
Yeah, so. It's projected to be 12th now. So whether you get a top five pick, top 10 pick with the Brooklyn one, it's an asset that you have that a team like Cleveland could need. And I think a guy like Jalen Green, honestly, is a good solution for them.
Yeah.
Because it's Cleveland. Who wants to live in Cleveland? When has Cleveland ever signed anyone of relevance? What they acquired? You know, they got Kyrie in the draft.
Yeah, they traded for Kevin Love, and they traded for Donovan Mitchell. And that's pretty much the list of stars that have gone to the Cavs, unless you want to throw in washed up Dwayne Wade, who only played there for half a season.
Yeah, and to get a guy like Kevin Love, they had to give up a guy like Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, they had to trade the number one pick.
I mean, he took his preseason photos in a Cavaliers uniform. That's how long it took for them to get the Kevin Love deal done. That he took photos as a Cav, and then they traded him.
Yeah.
So this is the kind of move that would make a lot of sense for Cleveland as well, of, okay, what assets can we get for Donovan Mitchell? A top 10 pick and Jalen Green and maybe another future asset or two. And I'd be comfortable trading some of the Brooklyn picks. And if you get really lucky, you could end up with two top four picks. Hell, you could just trade both those and Jalen, and I'd be fine with that too. But Donovan Mitchell is the kind of player that's going to be available this offseason that I would want if I'm the Houston Rockets. I would rather have Donovan Mitchell than Kevin Durant, 100%. Kevin Durant is not the player that he once was. Kevin Durant is old. He's always hurt. And the Rockets need a player that can be on the court, healthy, and help you win basketball games. and also try a little bit on defense. And KD does none of those things. Like, I don't want KD. I don't want Bradley Beal. Donovan Mitchell is who I want because Devin Booker is probably not going to be available this offseason.
I think if you're the Suns, I think, and they fired Frank Vogel last week, and Shams has basically gone with, they expect to hire Mike Budenholzer, so it's not official.
Yeah, but it's happening.
Yeah, when you already have the replacement, like, less than a week after you fire the other guy, I'm guessing...
24 hours?
Yeah, I'm guessing...
Vogel got fired last night.
Oh, yeah, officially. I mean,
Fizdale's already in the... David Fizdale, the former Grizzlies head coach, is already moved to the front office.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to be on Budenholzer's staff.
Yeah, so I'm... Let's go operate under the assumption that Budenholzer is going to be their coach. They're probably going to try to run this thing back at least one more time. At least take it to the deadline this season, because they're already so pot committed that even if they trade all these guys, like, it just ruins your franchise, and you might as well just try one more time. So realistically, the Suns guys aren't available. And so when you look at the guys who are available or are expected to be available, it is Donovan Mitchell, it is Paul George, who's likely to be a free agent and can still re-sign.
Pass.
He hasn't signed already.
Over Mitchell, at least. I'm if you're going to add to this team, not take away from the team, you know, like, if you're going to keep Jalen Green.
It would have to be a sign and trade of some sort, because they don't have
And that means Fred VanVleet's gone.
Yeah, either him or Dylan, likely.
And you probably need to add more, because, like, the Rockets don't have a ton of guys that are expensive besides Dylan Brooks and Fred VanVleet.
Yeah.
A couple things here. And Fuentes says they'd want Green and Şengün or Jabari.
Who?
The Cleveland for Donovan Mitchell.
Then they're not going to trade Donovan Mitchell, because no one's giving them that. No one's giving them the equivalent of
because
that.
The Rockets have a top 10 pick, and that's why Sunday will matter a little bit. We'll do that. Jonathan Fagan penned an article for the Chronicle today already talking about how that's pretty much the Rockets' plan, is to trade their first round pick.
Yeah, because they're
looking for assets, not players.
Yeah, young players. They don't know what this team doesn't need, another 19-year-old.
Yes.
That's what this team doesn't need. So
they don't need another person in their locker room that can't drink alcohol. They need someone that can help them win games. And a 19-year-old in an awful draft, by the way.
Yeah.
And that's what the two – that's where I would be open to the suggestion that they might need to add another piece. I don't think it would be Şengün or Jabari, though.
No, I mean, what do you
do? That's not who I'm asking for if I'm Cleveland.
Who are you asking for?
Cam?
I'm not saying yes. But.
Okay, so if Cleveland said – the only way you're getting Donovan Mitchell is Jalen Green
plus
the
another
Brooklyn pick plus one more player. And it can be dealer's choice. Alpi, Jabari, Amen Thompson, Cam Whitmore. You have to include one to get Donovan Mitchell. Are you including one of those? And who? Or are you passing on Mitchell?
What I would do is I'd start listing off all the Brooklyn picks Rockets have.
Yeah.
And just be like, how about four Brooklyn picks? How about that?
Yeah.
You see how awful they are?
What if it was Tari? Tari, Jalen, and Brooklyn's top 10 pick.
I would say Tari would be, to me, the most available of the core six, in addition to Jalen, that you're already throwing in there. And one thing about Jalen Green is that he literally plays Donovan Mitchell's position. So if you're a Cleveland, you already have your shooting guard of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess right now the second and third best players on the Cleveland Cavaliers are Darius Garland, who's 24 years old, and Evan Mobley, who I think is 21. He was in the same – he was picked one pick after.
Yeah.
And
they have Jared Allen. Because, like, the text line says here, Cleveland doesn't need another big. I tend to agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also why they wouldn't want Şengün. Like, where do you play all these guys?
I could see Jabari be like, they could find a way to be creative with him. Also because even though technically they don't need another big right now, they could easily move Jared Allen to a veteran team that's also – I mean, hell, he could come back in the deal with him, honestly, and right the wrong that so many people thought the Rockets made when they didn't get Jared Allen the first time when they traded away Harden. And then the text line here says, Mitchell ain't taking you to a championship. Okay. Maybe he's not. But I don't know if Jalen Green is either. And to me, Alperen Sengun is what's taking you to a championship.
Yeah, and the idea is that could you kind of approximate in some way the Jokic and Jamal Murray pairing, or the I guess Sabonis and Fox if you want to aim a little lower, but you know, can you get the big man passer with a very scoring guard that can shoot, that can dribble, that can pass, that can do that can do all the things that Donovan Mitchell has done the last five games. I mean, you look at his last five games. It's 28 points, 50, 39 in a game 7, 33, 29. So yeah. This is a guy who, like you said, has played himself into being a target, as someone that you would want to target, and I am in the same boat as well, where he has now become such a not just that he's playing well, is that he consistently plays very well in the playoffs.
Yeah, people forget what he did in Utah.
Yes,
he was a monster. He's for Utah had in the playoffs.
His rookie year, he had 38 in a closeout game 6 win against the Thunder.
Yeah,
he had 57 in the bubble against the Nuggets. And then had another 50-point game in that series. So
I would love Donovan Mitchell. To me, he should be number one target for the Rockets. And if he gets traded this offseason, if Cleveland pulls the trigger and moves on from him, I will be disappointed if he's not a Houston Rocket. And it is the most logical destination for him.
This will be the last kind of point I make on this, is that there's another thing working. Maybe in the Rockets' favor, it's definitely working in Donovan Mitchell's favor. It's the fact that when he got traded from Utah to Cleveland, he was signed for 3 years, so he really didn't have a say in where you can't exert the soft pressure of, yeah, you can trade for me, I'm not re-signing, though. And that's how you weed out teams that you don't want to go to trading for you. Now he's going into his last year on his deal, so whoever's trading for him has 1 year of contract, and then he is a free agent. So that is when you can play the, I'm not re-signing. So if you want to get 1 year of Donovan Mitchell, go for it. And so that could at least theoretically work in Houston's hands if Donovan Mitchell were to exert that kind of pressure and say, you know what, I'm only going to re-sign in 3 places, and one of them's Houston. Mm-hmm. That really helps the Rockets.
It absolutely would. All right, when we get back, an interesting suggestion from one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, adding another bye week, but not another game to the season. We'll do that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You are back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
All right, Gallant, George here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Sean filling in for Paul today and Monday. We got Austin behind the glass producing for us. So Joe Burrow suggested adding a second bye week to the NFL to help with rest for players, to give a break and let players get healthy. What do you think about that?
I get what he's going for, because if you read his quote, he said some teams have bye weeks in like week 5, week 6, then you have to go however many games in a row. And that is something where every year I look at that, I'm like, whew, that's got to be rough. Either having the week 5 or week 13 bye week, that's always rough. So I get what he's saying, where because he said that second bye week could be
uniform.
Yeah. Quote, he said, maybe you could do something like the first bye week is kind of how we have it now, and then the second bye, everyone has it off at once, and you make it like the Pro Bowl week, like the NBA All-Star break. I don't know. People get paid a lot of money to have those discussions and make those decisions, which is funny because Joe Burrow makes probably way more money than those guys make to make those decisions. But but what he's saying is to basically have a Pro Bowl week in the middle of the season where, or a week with no NFL football.
Yeah, that will never happen.
No.
There will never, ever be a week in which there's zero football unless a tragedy happens. Like there is no way they will ever do a off week for an entire NFL season.
Honestly, even if a tragedy happens, they might, you know, men now more than ever, they need us. They need the Ravens versus the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
And they might be right, but yeah, I don't think this is very realistic. It is just an interesting way because not under the 17 game format that we're already at, but when we think that the inevitable 18 game schedule happens,
because it's going to happen. It might be a decade, but it's going
to
happen.
I feel like you kind of have to add a second bye week.
You
start a week earlier, and the Super Bowl is a week later in February.
Well, and when they do that, when they add a game and they add a bye week, it's going to make everyone's dreams come true.
Oh.
Because the Super Bowl will be the Sunday before President's Day every single year.
There we go.
So there's your Monday national holiday. Like there that. That's it.
Except for us. That's why I don't care at all about that discussion.
It is funny when it comes up because it's like, yeah, like that'd be awesome. Like, dude, we're going to work.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to be working the day after Super Bowl.
Or when people are like, move it to a Saturday, which I don't like for two reasons. But one of them is like, actually having it on a Sunday is way better for radio.
100%.
To just come in the next day and talk
about
it.
My biggest argument when like people talk about moving games is I hate how the college football playoff football game and basketball game championship games are on Mondays.
Yes.
It's so stupid. Especially basketball when there's nothing going on.
Yes. They're both Saturday sports. I mean, college basketball, they play most days of the week. But for the most part, that's when the big games, and that's where every team plays on those Saturdays in January and February during conference play. And college football, obviously, Saturday sport. And like you said, their championship games are on Mondays. Football doesn't have that issue. It's a Sunday sport. I mean, now they do just kind of play on every day of the week.
Every day.
But for the most part, Sunday sport, their Super Bowl, the last game of the season, is on a Sunday. That just is something that makes sense to me. That is just something that I like, that it just fits in that way, that the biggest Sunday of the year, you know, you can't go the biggest Saturday of the year in college football because it's like, well, there's they play on a Monday. So there's a bigger game that happens. It's just not on a Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, look, we're going to get 18 games. It's going to be a 20-week regular season, 20 games total as well, because you're going to it's just going to be – the regular season is going to be 20 – or the preseason through regular season is going to be 22 weeks.
Yeah.
In the not-too-distant future.
And then you'll have wild card.
And you'll probably have expanded playoffs again.
So then you'll have a 5-week postseason. So you have 27 weeks. That's half the year.
And you're going to have 36 teams.
Yeah.
Like there, because I don't think the NFL is going to expand in a
to 34.
I think they're going to expand in a quick manner. Like I think they will go from 32 to 36 in a very short amount of time.
They'll skip 34.
Yeah. I think they might just go to 36. Okay. So, the only way they won't do that is because of the expansion drafts. So maybe they'll do two teams, and then two years later, they would add the next two.
Just to, like, stagger it.
Just because it's like, that means every team would lose, like, at least four players on your roster. But even then, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I think when the NFL expands and the schedule changes, it is all going to happen very fast, and the NFL will look very different very quickly.
It's like what we're seeing in college football, and there is a little bit of a credence to, hey, if you're going to drastically change your sport, just do it all at once.
Yeah.
Like, just do it all. Just if you're going to make it unrecognizable, or not unrecognizable, but if you're going to change like a bedrock foundation, which is for college football, it's the NIL stuff. You know what? Also do the transfer portal. And I know they didn't do it on purpose. They kind of got sued into having to do it all at once.
Mm-hmm.
But it is something where it's just like, hey, if you're going to change this, like just kind of wipe it clean. Like a fresh start.
Because like I think what the NHL is doing is weird. They added the Golden Knights. Then like 2 years later, they added Seattle, the Kraken, and they're still talking about expanding to Houston and other markets
and Atlanta.
And
finally, we can see if Atlanta hockey works.
Yeah, it won't. But like,
we'll see.
Like you just expanded by two teams, and then you're gonna wait like six more years and expand by another two. Just do it all at once. Just get it over with. Just move. Like, that's what the NBA is going
to
do.
Yeah,
the
they're
second
add to it.
That NBC and these deals get done, Seattle and Vegas will become official.
Yeah, I mean, Adam Silver's on the record by saying,
yeah.
Like, when he gets asked about expansion, he says, we'll finish the TV deal, then we'll get to expansion, which is as far as commissioners go, is a very direct way of saying, we will be expanding, and then you can do the math of, well, they're going to renegotiate the TV deal in 2024.
Yeah.
They're probably going to approve everything in 25 and then play in 26 or yes. maybe 27 is when the teams will actually take the take the floor.
And even then, like, the stadiums are ready.
Yeah.
Like, it's not. It's
Seattle
not like,
always has a stadium.
Yeah.
And
Vegas is
has
good to go.
Stadium. Like, I don't know if there's any other teams or any other cities.
I think they're only going to do two. I think they're only going to do two.
I just mean as that they could, any other city
oh, like
that could get the,
us.
Yeah, could get the bid instead of those two cities.
I would be stunned.
It would be surprised.
I would be stunned if it's not Seattle and Vegas.
Yeah, I can't think of.
If anything, they would probably do more expansion.
Yeah,
than not give those two teams.
They could do like Vancouver again, and then I don't know Nashville or something. You know, one of
yeah
Pittsburgh,
something like yeah
Louisville, something like that.
But. All right, when we get back, there's been a lot of insinuation. No official word from the Astros, but if you look at their projected starters, Spencer Arrighetti is still in the rotation. They said they're skipping Hunter Brown for this start, insinuating that it might just be a one-time thing. But does it make sense for the Astros to really go to a six-man rotation? We'll get into that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Hi there, we are James and Dan, two fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favorite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.